Hello, hello, everybody. You are listening to No Free Rides, brought to you by EasyStand.com, the makers of some of the finest standing frames in the planet. My name is Tiffany Carlson, and I am your host. So, hey, everybody. Today is October 29th, and if you've been dreaming of getting hooked up with adaptive diving one day, and this is the podcast for you. We will be joined by Brian Walker later on in the show. He is a C-56 quad, an ex-military guy who's completed over 40 dives in the last 2 years. So you'll want to definitely stay tuned for that, my friends. As I mentioned, it's October 29th, and that means it's the end of October, and Halloween is in the air. And I love Halloween, and a lot of people my age don't really give a crap about Halloween anymore. They think it's a stupid little holiday for kids. So are you a costume person or are you not a costume person? I always, think people out there that aren't costume people, even when they're adults, are kind of like Scrooges of Christmas. I think you should dress up no matter your age, you know? But for me, though, I feel like my interest is a little bit waning, but I'm still excited. And I think this year for Halloween, I'm going to dress up as Deputy Clementine Johnson from Reno 911. Because all you need is a state trooper costume or outfit, some really bright pink lipstick, and have a really bright pink lacy bra kind of hang out of your unprofessionally unbuttoned top, your shirt, and then have your aviators on and talk about how you have jungle fever all the time. Oh my God, I think it's going to be the funnest costume I've ever done. It's sexy and funny in one. And I actually did a blog the other day on wheelchair costumes, and usually most of them, if you incorporate your wheelchair into it, are pretty cheesy. And I, for years, I've never wanted to incorporate my wheelchair into any costume I did because I didn't want to, just be honest with myself that, yeah, I use a wheelchair. But you know what? The wheelchair can be a great accessory because you can build on it. And I met this girl online who's paralyzed. Her name's Gina Campbell. We actually had her on the show. She's a chef, and she loves costumes. So she's been Pocahontas in a canoe, made her wheelchair into a canoe. She was Amelia Earhart 1 year and made her wheelchair into a really cute little airplane. She was a disco train 1 year and was a train and a disco girl in a train. And she's inspired me to maybe one day work my wheelchair into a costume. So my idea for myself is I want to be a beauty queen on a truck that's waving. So I'm going to make my wheelchair into like a little mini truck. And then I'll be like this giant princess on top of the bed of the truck and I'll just wave. But that's not going to happen this year because I thought of the idea too late. But I might do it next year. It'd be fun. So, but what do you think is too old to dress up? You know, is there a cap? Obviously, there's a cap for trick-or-treating, which is like 13, if you ask me. But I think we're never too old to dress up. I think it's fun. It takes us out of our element. It's like President's Day masquerade parties. You know, people for centuries have loved to put on masquerade masks and go out to parties and not be themselves for the night. And really, Halloween is just a modern, crazier version of that. Scarier version. What have you guys been dressing up as? I want to know. If you have any really great Halloween costume ideas that you've done, send them to me because I could always use them for costume like podcasts just in the future. Maybe not Halloween related, but people always are dressing up for like sci-fi conventions or whatever. So let me know. I'm always trying to find the best, coolest wheelchair Halloween costume ever. So also too, you know, over the years I've had some pretty cool costumes. I was an Arctic mermaid 1 year. I wore a girl in a wheelchair as a mermaid. And then I was a pirate, which was fun. I was a gypsy girl. I was a Renaissance fair, like upper class lady because I had the whole outfit. I was a flapper. That was really fun. I really want to dress up as a Moulin Rouge can-can dancer one day. Anyways, when I was growing up, see, my family loved Halloween, and we'd transform our basement into a haunted house, and we'd make all the trick-or-treaters go through the basement before they get their candy, and all my mom and her crazy party friends would be the monsters in the basement, and it was over-the-top scary. Like, it was too scary for kids. And I miss it so much. It was so fun. And so now, you know, that I'm paralyzed, it's really hard to find an accessible haunted house because they're usually put on by private individuals, organizations, and they're great for doing it, like the Lions and whatever, but a lot of times they can't make it accessible for whatever reason. Haunted houses can have little nooks and crannies even when they build them from scratch, and so it's hard to find. And so I hope that you can find an accessible haunted house in your area. There's only one in Minneapolis that I can think of, and it costs $20, so it's kind of lame. Anyways, but you know, I've been watching The Walking Dead, and I've been watching An American Haunting on FX, which is really creepy and really good, which is a haunted horror kind of hour-long drama TV show. And the last episode was their Halloween episode, and on the show, they talk about on Halloween, it's the one day of the year that ghosts can leave their houses or wherever they're confined, and they can go. So it's kind of a creepy day. So think about that this Halloween, you know, and hopefully you'll all survive all Halloween's this Monday, because you kind of want to survive, because if you're disabled and you have limited mobility, you're definitely going to want to survive, at least because you don't want to die before you've tried deep sea diving. It's one of those things that'll take you out of your skin more than any costume will. So hold on one moment and we'll have Brian on the show. Hey everybody, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we are having Brian Walker join us today. He's a quadriplegic from Michigan who has been diving for several years now since his injury occurred. So hey Brian, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. A little tired, I just woke up, but I think it's going to be a good Saturday. It's pretty nice out. How are things in Michigan today?
It's pretty chilly here today.
Has it snowed there yet? Have you had your first snow?
We haven't had our first snow yet. We had a pretty heavy frost yesterday.
Heavy frost. We haven't even had that here in Minnesota. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, we made it all the way down into the upper 20s last night.
In the upper 20s. Oh my God, how did that feel?
Wasn't fun.
So do you live in the UP or the low P?
I'm in the Lower Peninsula.
Is there anybody, does anybody even live in the UP?
There are people that live up there, believe it or not.
Is it pretty? I've never been up there.
It's gorgeous up there. Absolutely gorgeous.
Cool. So you're a Michigan boy through and through?
I am. I've spent all but the 6.5 years I was in the military here.
Oh, so are you from the burbs of Detroit, or where exactly are you from?
I'm about an hour south of Lansing and about an hour and 20 minutes outside of Detroit.
Okay, so you're nowhere near American Jewelry and Pawn Store.
No, I'm near the world's largest walled prison.
Really?
Yes, Jackson is the home of the world's largest walled prison, or it was at one point.
Wow, so it's not in use anymore?
They've shut down a lot of it.
Oh, so, but it is partially still has prisoners, huh?
It does.
That's kind of cool. Cool. So that's, I've never been to Michigan, so that's why I ask about these questions. I don't know a lot about your state. So I know obviously you're paralyzed. Why don't you tell us how you got hurt? You'll start there.
I was in a car accident in 2002 that left me paralyzed from the chest down.
Okay. So what kind of car accident was it? Was it one of those? Was it your fault or someone else's fault? Not that it really matters. It was, you know, but what happened exactly?
I hydroplaned a car, and that was the end of it.
Oh, man, really? Hydroplaned a car. My brother hydroplaned my dad's Mustang. That sucks. So was it did you know, like, right away you were injured, and did you have to get airlifted, or how did they take care of you right after it happened?
Right away, you know something's not quite right, but, yeah, you know, it was the whole nine yards. They took you to the hospital. And
yeah.
Airlifted to another hospital, and then it was, you know, rehab from there.
How old were you?
I was 22.
Okay, and so were you in the you were in the military at the time, right?
I was.
Right, and what branch?
It was in the Air Force.
Air Force, right. That's pretty awesome, by the way. Is it true to be in the Air Force, you have to have perfect eyesight?
No, it's kind of a myth.
Okay.
They say you have to have perfect eyesight to fly, but I knew pilots that wore glasses as well.
Oh, really? Okay. So after your injury, you know, it's always, I always tell everybody when I write stories or articles about, you know, dealing with a spinal cord injury in the beginning, it's always the hardest. And for you, what kind of did you do to kind of help yourself adjust to, you know, what was not your this new life that you were living?
You know, I really dealt with the transition pretty well. Didn't really have any struggling points or real deep depression or anything like that.
How is that possible?
I don't know. I deal well, I guess.
Okay. Well, we should really... I think you're kind of not telling me the truth. I mean, you've lost 75% of your bodily function. How do you, you know, that's a huge loss for anyone, you know?
It is, and I'm not going to lie that it's not a huge change. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, you have to press on and...
You just be tough, right?
Either
it's probably the military in you, you know? You've got to be tough and carry on, right?
Right, you know, it's either deal with it or...
You know, moping around, right?
Right.
So that's cool. So, the reason I brought you on the show is because one of the things that you do now is you dive. And were you into diving before your accident?
I did do some diving before I was injured, but I've done drastic amounts since I've been injured.
Okay. So let's kind of expand on that. What kind of diving did you do before? Like, where did you go and that kind of thing?
Before?
Mm-hmm.
I dove mostly in South Carolina.
So you South Carolina dives, and was it for fun or was it for the military?
A little both.
Okay. Okay. So why don't you tell us how you started when you wanted to get back into diving after your accident?
It came down to my son wanted something that we could do together. Mm-hmm. So this was perfect, you know, something we could both do together.
When did you first hear about it?
I heard about it through a rehabilitation therapist.
Okay, that's great.
I guess he's a rec therapist, is what he really is.
Were you surprised that, you know, it was still possible for you to do such a thing?
At first I thought it was kind of a crazy idea.
Yeah.
Then the more I thought, I was like, you know what, why not? So, figured why not, gave it a try, and met up with a guy in Chicago, actually, that does training for disabled people.
Okay, in Chicago? So you had to fly there to get all this set up?
I drove out there. It's only 4 hours
from here. Wow, cool. I heard it's very expensive.
Diving's expensive if you want to buy all of your own equipment.
Right.
If you don't, you know, if you're only going to do 2 or 3 dives a year, absolutely rent your stuff, and it's a pretty cheap hobby, really.
So, can you tell us, like, about the equipment and stuff that you need? Like, because, you know, I know nothing about what it would take for a quadriplegic to get in the water. Is it the exact same stuff that you would need if you weren't paralyzed?
What's
different?
It is the exact same stuff. You want to be careful about certain items that you do get if you do buy your own stuff.
Okay, well, tell us about them.
We'll tell you that certain buoyancy compensators are better than others. You know, it comes down to personal preference for the most part. I personally, and I don't know how you are, I'm cold all the time.
Yes, I know. I'm cold more so than anything, yeah.
And I'm the same way. And in the water, you lose your body temperature 20% faster than you do in the air.
Ugh, oof.
So I've done like 5 wetsuit dives since I've been injured.
Okay.
I'm strictly dry suit now.
Oh, now what's the difference?
A dry suit's exactly that. You stay dry in it.
You stay completely dry in it.
And you wear undergarments under it. Basically, it's like thinner snowmobile suit kind of thing.
Nice.
And you stay toasty warm in it.
That's really, and it really works, huh? That's crazy.
Yes.
And you've done the...
They're actually available. I mean, lots of people, you know, here in the north, people dive them in the wintertime when it gets cold, you know, ice,
yeah,
things like that. I actually have a suit that's made by a company in California.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed for tropical diving that I dive year-round.
Oh. So what company makes that?
A company called DUI.
Okay. How much does that cost?
Mine's a custom-made suit, so it was like $2,200.
Okay, but it really does help you stay warm in the water, and that's, I imagine it helps the experience be, like, way better. I can't imagine being underwater and, like, freezing my butt off. It would be hard for me to really have a good time.
You know, I've done, when I first got certified, I had a custom-made wetsuit, which was another expensive ordeal, not as expensive as a dry suit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it kept you warmer.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it wasn't warm enough, and it wasn't enjoyable to do repetitive dives in a day.
Mm-hmm.
So once I went to a dry suit, I can do 2, 3, 4 dives a day, and I'm perfectly comfortable.
That's pretty great. And so, is it hard to get the suit on? I was looking at it. I was like, man, if I ever wanted to go diving, my PC would have to struggle her ass off to get that on me.
It is a little bit of work. A dry suit is definitely easier to get into than a wet suit.
Okay, just less sticking to the body and whatnot.
Wet suit's like trying to put your entire body in a glove, and we all know
how. Oh, my God. Yeah, I can barely get gloves on my hands, let alone a whole glove on my body.
No, putting on a dry suit's more like putting on a mitten than putting on a glove.
So do you wear flippers?
I don't. I've got no leg movement, so...
There's no point, really?
Kind of pointless, yeah.
Okay. And then, what kind of headgear do you have to wear?
It depends on the water temperature.
Okay. So, see, I know nothing of like this, so they educate me, Brian.
Typically with me, anything under about 65 degrees, I'll wear a hood.
Okay.
If I'm going to be doing a longer dive, you know, 75 degrees and under, I'll wear a hood.
Where would you go in the water if it was that cold? Where kind of dives are those located at? Or can it just be cold like that in Mexico even one day?
Well, in Mexico, typically the water is 82 degrees from top to bottom.
Oh, wow.
So it's great diving there. But, you know, here in the Great Lakes, you know, even in, you know, I was diving in August in the Georgian Bay.
That's so cool.
It was, you know, 38 degrees at 75 feet deep.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe you did that. Freshwater diving, do you like that better than saltwater?
I definitely like the color of the reefs and whatnot better in saltwater.
Yeah. They do lake diving in Minnesota and some of the lakes, and I always wonder, well, what's to look at, you know?
Where you guys are at is probably brown, wet sticks.
Yep. How about where you're at?
Actually, where we went into, it was Tobermory, Canada,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a shipwreck haven.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's basically all you dive there is shipwrecks.
Did you see shipwrecks?
And there's a lot of them are, you know, 100-year-old wooden schooners that because they're in fresh water that's, you know, almost frozen, they're preserved.
Wow. So you were down right in that, huh?
Right.
That would be amazing. That sounds amazing. So when you first started, you know, diving paralyzed, I mean, they say that it's way easier when, you know, obviously when you're in water and you can move a lot better, you know, zero gravity kind of thing.
Right.
So did you find that to be the case? Is it really that easy?
It is a lot easier to move.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues you do have with a dry suit is it is a bubble around you.
Yeah.
So if you get too much air into one arm, it's going to float on you.
Oh.
You don't have that, you know, normal tricep straighten it back out. So you got to move it a little bit, but it works out.
Can you move independently in the water?
I can, but I'm pretty slow, so usually somebody drags me.
Someone drags you. How does it feel? Like, just to be in the water, like, feeling, like, more able to move, is it pretty great?
It's a completely different sensation than you're ever used to.
I think it's, like, helps keep your mind healthy just to move in that way, you know, getting out of your chair and that kind of thing?
It does, and I'll tell you what, one of the other great benefits of it is your muscle spasticity is greatly reduced.
Really? Like,
I don't know if it's just because the constant pressure on all of your body that it just mm-hmm. relaxes more, but for like a week after a couple of dives, you hardly have any spasms.
You know, and that's what I was going to say, and you know, I saw this research that the Cody Unser Foundation recently did, and
actually just recently here in Detroit.
Yeah, and she, you know, was fortunate enough to be able to dive with her through her family and noticed the temporary neurological benefits after
right.
she dove, and so then they did some research on 9 incomplete paralyzed people that have been paralyzed for, some guys that were in the study had been paralyzed for even 15 years, and all of them noticed a little bit of improvement in a little bit of sensation, a tiny bit of mobility, and obviously mental health benefits. But of course then it doesn't last after a couple weeks, and they were saying they think the theory here and why it works is that our bodies, when we're underwater that deep, absorb our blood absorbs nitrates differently, which affects the nitrates affect our spinal cord, our neurological system, and it enhances it, actually. That's the theory behind it. Isn't that awesome?
There's definitely something to it.
Yeah, and have you ever noticed anything other than just, like, decreased spasms?
I haven't really seen much more than that.
Okay, yeah, you know, be honest, you know.
I'm a pretty high-level quad, though.
Okay.
And I wouldn't see a drastic amount of improvement.
Yeah. Are you complete or incomplete?
I am complete.
Yeah, and that's probably why you have to be incomplete for it to kind of be a benefit, they have said.
I have noticed that the deeper the dives are, the more, like, relief you get from spasms as well.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, how what's the deepest you've gone? And, yeah, and you've noticed the correlation between the two, huh?
The deepest I've gone is 109 feet.
Where was that at?
It was in Key Largo, Florida.
Key Largo, Florida. That's cool. And was it scary? I would be so scared. I would feel like I was in the movie Abyss and I'm never coming back up or something.
You know, down there the water was clear enough that even at 109 feet, it didn't really seem like you were that deep.
Ugh. Was there just a ton of fish down there? Or the lower you get, there's probably not as many?
There wasn't so many fish there. It was an artificial reef. It was a boat that actually sank there that we were diving on.
Oh, fun. Do you ever worry about, like, if you're diving or being around boats, possibly things falling off and breaking and hitting you and you can't get away?
No, I've never really thought about that.
Because I would be scared if a boat part fell on me and I couldn't swim away fast enough. I guess
people are worried about sharks and you're worried about boats.
Yeah, you can't worry about everything, right?
Right.
Have you ever had anything scary happen to you while, like, close near misses while you were diving, stuff, anything?
Nothing yet, thank God.
Thank God. So you got hurt in 02, so did you start diving, like, literally right away?
No, I didn't really go back into it until about 2 years ago.
Oh my God, so it hasn't been that long. And how old is your son, by the way? I forgot to ask you that.
Yeah, I just turned 13.
Okay, and that's a great thing to do with a son of that age.
Right.
I bet he loves it, huh?
He does. He enjoys it a lot.
Cool. So let's talk about just some of your favorite places. Like, where would you recommend people to go, you know, if you're paralyzed? And what would be a good places you'd recommend in regards to good locations for, like, getting in the water?
It depends on what you want to see.
Okay.
Now, if you're a big fish lover, I would have to say go to the Georgia Aquarium.
The Georgia Aquarium?
There's actually a program through the Georgia Aquarium that you can get into their Ocean Voyager exhibit.
Okay.
Which is actually full of all sorts of sharks.
Oh, my God, really?
It's a great dive. I've done it twice, and I would definitely recommend
that. Sounds amazing to have sharks just going around you.
There's most of them are non-aggressive sharks.
I think I've seen that at the Minnesota Zoo, and I don't know if I'd want to be in with them, but I guess they know what they're doing, huh?
Right. You know, the zoo there, or the aquarium there in Georgia, they're known because they have whale sharks, which is the largest of all the sharks.
Okay.
And they've got four of them in this exhibit, and it's just an amazing exhibit to be in.
Wow. How much does that cost? It's like obviously you pay for a one-time session.
You know, I don't remember how.
Okay. So if people are in Georgia, or if you're planning to go there for a vacation, that's definitely something to think about, huh?
Right. You do have to be a certified diver.
You do. And that's what I actually wanted to talk about, because you just can't show up and say, I want to go diving.
No, there's some schooling involved.
So for people out there that have no idea, just kind of give us the brief rundown how, let's say if you're paralyzed out there, and, you know, or it doesn't matter if you're paralyzed, if you're out there and want to dive, what do you got to do?
There's bookwork that'll take you maybe, I don't know, a week to finish all of it.
Okay. So you have to do some studying on a
book. And then, you know, there's a test on the bookwork.
Okay.
Then you do some water skills, and you're a certified diver.
Well, do you have to pass water skills?
You do.
So what are they?
You have to be able to take off your mask and put it back on underwater. You have to be
You can do that then?
Well, they basically teach you that, you know, somebody will put it back on for you if you don't have the ability.
Okay.
But you have to be able to get the water back out of it.
So they have modified rules then.
Right, and you have to be able to prove that you can, you know, breathe without your mask on.
Oh, my gosh.
Because, you know, your nose is open and you're trying to breathe.
Is that hard to do?
You know, it's not that hard to do.
Okay, because I just feel like I always breathe through my mouth, you know? So this is what you breathe through, your nose or your mouth?
You're going to breathe through your mouth while you're diving.
And then they just want to make sure that works right? That's what they check?
Right, they want to make sure that you can do that without breathing in through your nose.
Oh.
Obviously, underwater.
Scary. Oh my gosh. So people sometimes wear a nose clip just to prevent that from happening?
You don't want to clip off your nose because you want to be able to equalize the pressure in your mask.
Oh, man.
Pressure pushes it harder against your face, and it actually starts to hurt once you get too deep.
That's fascinating. The water pressure thing is really huge, isn't it?
It is. For the most part, your body doesn't notice it, though.
It doesn't? Not until you get out?
We're mostly water, so we don't really compress.
Okay. But when you get out, that's obviously when you notice. When you finally leave the water after you're done, then you notice some of the effects, right?
Right.
But, you know, they were saying that hyperbaric chambers would kind of replicate the effects of what people were experiencing from underwater dives. Have you ever considered doing that?
You know, I haven't had to take a ride in the chamber yet.
Yeah, I heard, you know, even sport and, like, athletes, like top-level athletes will pop themselves in a hyperbaric chamber once a week to feel extra great.
Right.
I would love to try that. Because essentially, a hyperbaric chamber mimics what you would experience in an underwater dive in regards just
right.
the pressure.
Obviously, it's a little more in detail doing it.
I don't know. That would be great. But there's the visual benefits, though.
There's actually some of the local dive shops do trips to one of the local hyperbaric chambers so that you can feel narcosis effects.
Really?
Kind of a crazy thing, but yeah.
Narcosis. What does the narcosis effects mean?
Narcosis is when your body's absorbed too much nitrogen.
Oh, scary.
And you feel drunk and don't use the best judgment.
Oh, so they want you to be able to recognize it.
Right.
That's cool. That's a good idea, actually. Have you ever had that happen to you?
I have not had narcosis yet. I'm pretty sure my wife is a victim of it at about 90 feet, but...
Oh, my gosh. And that is that pretty deep, 90 feet?
At 90 feet, you're still within recreational diving limits.
Okay. Okay. So is that, like, that's what a novice would be comfortable at.
Right.
And what are some of the really deepest dives that people will go on?
Some of your tech divers will do 200 and 300 feet.
And you would never do that?
I wouldn't say never.
Never. So you have some big plans. You maybe you want to get even like crazier with your diving, maybe?
I've actually I've done the coursework for trimix diving, which is where you mix helium into the mix so that you can dive deeper yet. So,
oh, yeah. Are you one of the first people with paralysis to maybe do that?
I have no idea.
You might be.
Possibility.
See, there's a story right there. I think it's interesting, and I think it's so cool to talk to you because, you know, I've always just seen a little bit, of articles online about people that do diving, but I don't think it's that common or that popular with people. It's just because, it is kind of expensive, and we all know that, it's still, but it's 100% worth it, and, and a lot of times, too, like you were saying, you can rent the equipment,
Right.
So where can you, you have to find a resort that would rent it, or would you... do like the places in Georgia like you recommended, do they rent equipment there?
Now, when you do the aquarium dive in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
they require you to use their equipment because they keep it sanitary for the aquarium use. Oh,
really?
So you completely use their gear. You don't use any of your own.
Oh, that's crazy. And they make sure it fits you and everything then.
Right. They've got, a whole warehouse full of it there.
Is it pretty easy to rent equipment wherever you are, no matter what, or do you own your own equipment? And do you think
I own my own, but typically if you go to any resort around the world, they're going to have equipment you can rent.
Okay. And so how many dives have you been on completely?
Since I've been injured?
Mm-hmm.
Right around 40 dives in the last.
That's crazy. That's so cool. So do you love Mexico? Have you been to Cozumel? Because I heard Cozumel has some of the best diving, that little island off the coast of Mexico.
I've been there twice, and I'm currently building a house there.
Wow, a house?
Yep.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Okay, so is it on the ocean?
It's not on the ocean, but it's close enough to walk there.
I was in Cozumel on a cruise stop, and we got to go on a rainforest tour on the interior of the island. There's some Aztec ruins that are... not really well known, but they're really creepy.
Right.
Have you been to those?
Mayan ruins everywhere.
Mayan ruins, yeah. Oh, man. And I wish they were more wheelchair accessible, but I guess the Mayans weren't thinking about us, huh?
Well, we were a little advanced.
Have you been on any of those tours? We're kind of going off subject, but since you've been down there a lot, have you?
I haven't done the Mayan ruin tours yet, but mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll get that chance.
Because you should. You should. Because those are amazing, and I... really believe that there's some creepy like energy. So if you're like into like haunted house tours, it's totally worth it, I would say. When I was in Cozumel and went in the back in the jungles, it was one of the creepiest things ever. I swear that there was like this like dead Mayan staring at me in the jungle.
I'll put that on the list right after the Gila Factory tour.
Okay. So you're just kind of just a straight, serious traveling diver guy. You don't really like do much else when you go to your locations. You just kind of just try to focus on the diving? Like, is that, like, the whole point of your trip, usually?
It's the majority of the trip, but, we still get out and have a good time.
So, did your wife kind of just, like, hop on board on the dive train, or did she like diving before she met you?
No, she just got certified 2 years ago.
Oh, well, that's cool. And she likes it? Loves it?
She loves it.
Loves it. Is it really just because it's a transformative experience, too? You're in the water, and it's like you're just forgetting all your troubles because they're at the top of the water far away.
I think the best part about it is all of your great dive locations are someplace nice and sunny.
Yeah?
So, how can you, argue with a good vacation and something to do?
Oh, that's great. And also, too, there's probably a whole sense of being more equal to everyone else because you're out of your chair.
Right.
And you're in the water, just like everyone else. And I think that sounds amazing. So... what are we forgetting here? I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about, you're saying that you don't have to wear flippers. What about any other equipment that we might have been forgetting now? Is there anything special that you use?
There really isn't. Nothing that I dive with it's all bought off the shelf.
Okay. And your wife is the one that helps you with, or do you have to make sure you bring someone with you usually?
I usually dive with two other people.
or to other people. And that's great. Well, I think that a lot of people out there would love to try it out. And I would love to, too. You know, I was thinking maybe there's some, like, programs out there that would give people, like, a deal on, you know, possibly, you know, a discounted version at some places. Do you know of any places out there that would maybe, like, a rehab kind of setting for diving?
I know there's a lot of organizations out there for Wounded Warriors.
Okay, the Wounded Warriors Project. That's a really great project. Jared Allen on the Minnesota Vikings is doing a lot of work with that.
Now, the group that I went through is actually, it's called Dive Heart.
Mm-hmm.
Out of, it's just south of Chicago. I can't remember what the name of the actual city is that they work out of.
Yeah.
But it's Dive Heart is the group that certified me.
Okay, Dive Heart, cool. And they specialize in veterans?
They're just disabled people all together.
Okay, what's their website?
I believe it's diveheart.org.
Diveheart.org. That's awesome. And is it a pretty big, like, they have their own pool and everything, or how does it work when you show up to Dive Heart?
They, I did all of my pool stuff elsewhere and just did my open water dives with them.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's they don't have their own pool, but they have resources that they can use.
Okay. And how long does it take when you're there and on location, you know, getting all your, because you probably just want to get it done with if you're not from Chicago and go back home, so.
Right. You're looking at 2 days easy.
And it's worth it, though, huh?
Absolutely.
Because those people there know exactly what they're doing when you show up.
Right.
Because it would be a little bit frustrating if, you know, you can't expect many, like, every dive guy out there to know how to help you out. Would it be pretty risky to kind of go somewhere that isn't, you know, specializes in helping people with disabilities?
I would say, yeah, it'd be a little bit risky. I was surprised that, actually, Dive Heart had trained some of the dive masters down in Cozumel.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, one of my first stops after I was injured.
Really?
Down there.
That's cool.
And you know, even with the language barrier and everything, these guys did great.
They did? I find that that's the case down there. People there are so helpful.
Right.
And so nice. Like, they just want to help you, you know. They'll help you with anything. That's awesome. Well, so what are any? Do you have any plans now for this upcoming winter? We're in October right now. What are your any dives for this winter here? Get out of Michigan.
Well, we're going to make another trip to Cozumel, you know, starting in January.
Yeah, to check on your house, probably, Greg.
Right. It should be done in the next week. You know that.
Wow.
I have the hurricane they had this weekend, so.
That's crazy. So. Tell us about this. Is it going to be, obviously, wheelchair accessible? Is it like a cute little bungalow, or what kind of house is it?
It's actually, you know, kind of in town. It's a concrete structure, so it's mostly hurricane-proof.
Wow.
Wheelchair accessible. So, yeah.
How did you find contractor? Was it pretty easy to find someone that could work with the accessibility thing down in Mexico, or what?
It really wasn't too hard. Actually, the real estate lady that I was working with, she recommended her builder to me. And
mm-hmm.
No, it just turns out he speaks better English than I do, so I couldn't go wrong.
How many square feet?
It's 1,200.
1,200? That'll be perfect. So it's like your little vacation home, huh?
Right.
Oh, my God. You'll have to, like, come up with a cool name for it.
Right.
Like Casa Diving Awesomeness or something.
Figure something out.
You know what you should do is set up a little dive school yourself one day, Brian.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like work.
It's a lot of work, you know. I know you like to have fun.
Right.
I know. Do you have season tickets to the Detroit Red Wings?
I do the 20 games a year.
That's awesome. I've always wanted to go to the Minnesota Wild, but they kind of blow, so.
You typically beat them every year.
You typically beat them every year. Did the Red Wings win last year, the Stanley Cup?
They did not.
No.
They do have 20 years of making the playoffs under them, though.
Yeah. So what else do you do for fun, now that I got you on the phone here? I know that you're always busy. You were just in Vegas last weekend.
Vegas last weekend, it was my stepdaughter's 21st birthday.
Ugh, you're such a nice dad.
It was her mom's idea. I just had to go along with it.
So, Vegas, obviously, super wheelchair accessible.
You know, I hadn't been there in 9 years. I was surprised how wheelchair accessible it is.
It's probably the most wheelchair accessible city in the whole country. In regards to finding hotel rooms and everything, every hotel's trying to one-up because they always want to get the senior citizen client, you know?
Right.
So where did you stay?
I actually stayed at the Hooters Hotel there.
Are you kidding? They have a Hooters Hotel?
They do.
Ooh.
Right across the street from MGM on Tropicana.
Oh, okay. I know where the MGM is. I love gambling at the MGM. I find the tables there are very loose.
Right.
Yeah. So the Hooters Hotel, I'm not going to let you go without saying more about this place. Your wife let you stay at the Hooters Hotel.
Hey, it wasn't even my idea.
What?
It wasn't.
Was it your 13-year-old son's idea?
He didn't go with us. He was, he was with his mom. It was actually her idea.
Was it a good deal or what?
It was. We got a good deal with airfare and everything else on it, so it was worthwhile.
Is it a new hotel or has it been there for a while? I think it has been there for a while, hasn't it?
2006, I think.
Okay. Is it pretty cool? Is there like Hooters girls walking all around serving drinks and like dealing blackjack?
It is, yes.
That's insane. It's like a little less classy version of the Playboy Club.
Right.
Have you been to the Playboy Club at the Palms?
I have not.
And I want to go there. It looks like just a blast.
If the Palms wasn't so far out on its own, I would have gone.
I know. That's why I didn't go. The Palms, FYI, everybody out there, we're talking Vegas speak, is a really cool hotel that's about several blocks off the Strip. If you're in a wheelchair, I didn't make it there either because you got to get a cab or something.
Right, which they're easy to get there.
They're easy to get. I found a cab in Vegas that was wheelchair accessible that actually was, that looked like an English cab, and it had a ramp on the side, and I was just fascinated. I thought it was the cutest thing ever. And I fell in love with Vegas on the spot after I saw that.
The monorail was new since the last time I was there.
What? Monorail? Tell me about that. I was there in 07. I don't think they had a monorail there.
There's a monorail that goes from MGM clear out to Sahara now.
Wow. So it just kind of covers the whole Strip.
Yeah.
And is it, obviously, it's accessible.
It is.
So is it one of those things like at Disney World when you go on the monorail, you have to go up these big cement ramps back and forth kind of?
No, they've got elevators at pretty much every station that it stops at. And
wow, and then that's such a great idea. Because I remember kind of rolling down the Strip on a hot,
right,
and then like the bus fumes are in my face, and I'm going down on that crappy side of the Strip, and there's all those little stores and bars. I don't mind that, but it's a long roll.
Right, right. Yeah, the monorail's it's pretty nice.
Cool. And how much does that cost?
It was like $12 for 24 hours, unlimited ride.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
So also in Vegas, since we're on Vegas Talk, do you gamble?
I do.
So what do you like? What's your poison?
Blackjack will get me every time.
Blackjack, yeah. Blackjack is one of my favorites. I've always loved it ever since I had a little blackjack handheld computer thing when I was in high school.
Right.
And I learned how to, you know, insurance and push and all that. And I find that it's actually not that hard to make money playing blackjack.
It's not, as long as you're not too intoxicated.
As long as you're not too intoxicated. And also, too, I can't stand putting down more than $10 a hand. Will you?
I will. I won't lie. I will. Anymore, it's hard to find tables.
I know. That's why I go to the MGM, because they have $5 blackjack tables there.
Right. They actually had a $3 table at Hooters.
They did.
It was kind of crazy.
Did you win?
I never played on the $3.
You never did. So did you leave Vegas with money?
No.
No. That's all right, though. It's worth it.
Right. I had a good time. That's all that matters.
Cool. So any other favorite haunts, any other like entertainment places that you want to recommend that you checked out while you were there? Because there's so many things. I saw Zoomanity, the Cirque du Soleil Zoomanity at the New York Casino, which is basically Cirque du Soleil's X-rated version of a show. That's pretty awesome. You should go to that.
Now this last trip, we didn't make any of the shows.
You didn't?
We were only there for a weekend. We didn't have a lot of time.
Oh, so you were there for a week?
Weekend.
Oh, weekend. Okay. So you just gambled and ate?
Right.
Did you go to any of the famous chef restaurants?
We didn't, know.
No, I went to Emerald's restaurant, the one at the Venetian. I forget the name of it. It's a steakhouse.
Right.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I love Vegas. I really want to go on another trip. I'm kind of itching to go somewhere. I don't know what. Have you ever gone over to Europe diving?
I haven't.
No. That would be crazy, huh?
You know, I've heard a lot of good things. I've heard a lot of bad things. So, I don't know. I'll have to try it out and see how it really goes.
So, do you have, like, the ultimate dream, like, dive that you'd want to do one day?
You know, my list is open. I'll dive anything anybody wants to dive.
All right, so you have nothing that you're dying to dive right now, is what you're telling me. Because I think it'd be so cool to, like, do the Titanic, wouldn't it be?
Kind of neat, though. I don't think you can get there in a, you know, scuba.
You can't?
No.
No, you're right. They have that thing that goes down there, don't they?
You got a sub that'll get you there, but
they really?
Yeah.
I swear, I saw something on TV the other day. I must have been just totally out of my mind. So, Brian, now, and also, too, you know, you have these kids, and why don't you tell me just a little bit about parenting, you know, as a guy in a chair, and I know it's not a big deal, and I think that's so respectable. You don't make a big deal out of your chair, and that's awesome, but you know, how has it been, you know, with your boy? And, you know, have you felt like, you know, trying to make up with diving's a good thing, since, you know, there's some things you can't do with him, but how's he dealt with it?
For the most part, he's dealt with it pretty well. You know, he was very young when I was injured.
Yeah, right, because he's 13 now, and that was like 9 years ago when you got hurt then.
Right.
Yeah, but it just seems to work out. Like, he's like, that's my dad, right?
Right.
You know? And what else, what other activities have you found that you guys can do together that, you know, still is great?
You know, there's really not a lot.
Yeah.
Not a lot of, you know, hands-on interactive stuff that the two of us can do together.
Does he live with you?
He lives with his mom most of the time.
Yeah. You ever find, I always worry if I had a kid, and this sounds really awful, but I feel like with being that I have a disability, I'm always worried that the kid would kind of disrespect me or something, you know?
You know, I haven't found that.
Okay, because that's just me being paranoid, I think.
No, occasionally I'll watch a friend of mine's children, and their youngest daughter's better with me than anybody.
Really?
It's almost like she knows that I can't really do anything to her, so she gives me a break.
What level are you again? I forget. You're a C5?
I'm C5, C6.
C5, C6. Yeah, that's what I am too. And it kind of sucks. I have been having some days lately where I just am just driving me crazy, like, lack of sensation. I constantly keep thinking about, like, oh, I, like, when I take my covers off my body in the morning, I'm like, oh, if I could feel my body right now, I'd feel all the cold air hitting my stomach and legs, and it starts, and I don't know why that lack of sensation like that I lost never really bugged me all these years.
Right.
Until recently. I don't know, have you ever had anything like that happen to you?
I haven't. The one thing that does bother me is I get that, like, numb, like the heel of my thumb.
Can you say that again? Sorry.
Like a numb feeling in the, like, the heel of my thumb.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like dry skin whenever you touch anything. It drives me crazy.
Oh, Jesus, that would drive me crazy, too. It just, it's like, I try to not think about it, and that's what I've heard from, like, the masters of coping with spinal cord injury. They're like, Tiffany, you just gotta not think about it. You gotta think about what you can do.
Right.
Yeah, I'm like, I know that. I keep trying to, but there's lately, I have no idea why. I've been paralyzed for, God, so long, 18 years, and all these years, just the mobility, oh, I can't walk, I can't dance, that's what pissed me off. But now I'm feeling shortchanged on the sensation department.
I'm feeling shortchanged, I could never dance.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was funny. So, and then, you know, I keep hoping that one of these, like, stem cell treatments would maybe, if I ever had the money, or if it ever would even work, you know. But I've heard of some girls that I've known with paralysis that have gone over to Russia,
right,
and have gotten their own stem cells injected into their bodies, and they have gotten some increased sensation back, actually.
Crazy.
Wouldn't that be crazy? Yeah. I would you ever do anything like that?
You know, I followed all that stuff for a long time, and I just have gotten out of it.
You know, I think for me, as much as I want to get better, I feel like there's not enough really, like, the results aren't exciting enough for me.
Right.
To want to risk them putting stuff in my neck again.
I mean, here's the other thing, you know, if you go through with that, is it going to deter something later on if they find something else, you know?
You're right, like, well, sorry, you've already been worked on, or you've already had your one chance for them to do something to you, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, that's a valid, you know, concern. I actually didn't even think of that. That is kind of, yeah, you know, so you've been paralyzed for 9 years, and did you ever get any movement back at all, like, over the years, or no, it's been the same thing completely, huh?
Yeah, I've gotten some back. It was all medically, but I got it back.
What did you do? Like, did you do the tendon transfer?
I've had tendon transfer, and I've had neuroprosthesis implanted.
What's that?
It's, a bunch of wiring and a pacemaker type frame, and it gives me a hand grasp and release back.
Oh my God, I read about that, and that is cool that you got that. So,
I'm actually one of a few that actually have in both arms. So,
has it in both arms?
Right.
Man, I wish we had video on this podcast. I'd ask you to show me right now. I want to see it in action.
It's I've actually damaged it recently. I've one of the nerves that goes to the hand, I've somehow damaged the nerve.
Oh no, is it that sense? Is it pretty sensitive?
Well, I don't feel it, but it creates a problem with the stimulation and the electronics.
Okay.
Now I'm currently waiting for the nerve to regrow so it goes back to the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, so is the setup pretty sensitive? Like, is it can it break easily?
The setup isn't sensitive. It's apparently, you know, the human body is sensitive.
So, okay, so I just for people out there, I don't really know exactly how this works. And what the end result is that it actually, you can open and close your hand?
Right.
That's in being a C5.
A myoelectric signal from muscles that you have control over. In my case, it's like the brachioradialis in my left arm.
Okay.
When you flex that muscle, it causes the contraction of the electronics in your hand.
And then it opens and closes?
Right.
So all it does, and it does just the open and close movement. Does it do any other movements or no?
There's a programmed grass pattern that you can, so you can switch between.
Wow.
Different grass patterns and do whatever you need to do.
And what do you, did you use it, did you, before it broke, did you use it a lot or?
I did, I used it quite a bit.
For what activities mainly did you find it the most useful for?
You can use it from everything to grab a fork to a glass of water.
Weird, so you're just like twitching a little muscle on your left side and then your right hand would open?
Because I've got it in both arms, I use the brachioradialis in both arms.
Wow, that's so cool.
I use both hands independently.
Yep, and did you get that fairly right after you got hurt, so you were able to kind of get it before your hands got any contractions?
My hands never really contracted, which is kind of odd.
Yeah, that is odd. Your occupational therapist, you know, usually when you are paralyzed, you know, and you have some paralysis in the hands, the therapist, like, right away, they want to mold your hands and, like, get them into a perfect little shape so they're of the most use to you. That's what at least happened to me, but that was way long ago.
You know, when I was first injured, it was always the resting hand splints at night.
I know, you don't want that look, you know, everyone wants to avoid it.
Well, I was always in those at night, and yeah, my hands never really got the contractions that most people do.
So they're just kind of loose and they kind of flop around if you're not actually using it. Mine right now, I'm looking at my hands, they're really tight little fists. Do you think the that implant would work for someone like me? I probably would have to get my hands taken care of first, right?
You know, to be honest with you, because of the way the system works, it's going to straighten it out for you.
Wow, it's really that strong?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's insane. So where did you go to get that? Is there like one place to get it?
There's a bunch of researchers in Cleveland that did it.
Wow. And did it hurt at all to get it in your, like afterwards, with the surgery afterwards, was it pretty bad?
The tendon transfer surgery was a little painful.
Mm-hmm. And tendon transfer surgery, I was just thinking about it the other day because my friend Megan, who's in Florida, got it done in 08, and I keep wondering. She hasn't really expanded on all the benefits of it because I don't think she found it to be as useful for her as some people have. Some people that get it love it, and they can do a ton more and start transferring themselves out of the blue. Because what it does is, right, it takes up your arm tendon, like your bicep tendon that you can still move,
right.
And then they move it, the bottom of it over to where the tricep area would be, right? Is that what technically it's doing?
It depends on which tendon transfer they did. I had a posterior deltoid to tricep transfer done.
Okay. So what did they do in layman's speak?
They took a part of the shoulder muscle that I had control over and stretched it down to turn it into a tricep.
Wow, that's so cool. And was it crazy, like the noticeable difference? Were you amazed?
My left arm came out fantastic. I mean, it's a very strong transfer. My left arm, I ended up with an infection post-surgery.
Yeah.
And it didn't take as well.
That sucks. That, you know, it's surgery is always a risk, but, you know, at least you got your good left arm.
Right.
If it didn't turn out, can they go back and fix it?
They're not sure how much more they can do with it because, you know, at this point they have, you know, changed the muscle structure.
Yeah. Can you transfer yourself? Were you able to, like, transfer yourself after the surgery? Was that, like, one of the...
Really that strong.
Wow, that's really cool.
Well, I can lay in bed and straighten my arm out over the top of me, so it's kind of...
Wow, like, over your head?
Right.
Without it falling in your head?
Right.
Oh my god, I want to get that surgery, but I'm such a baby, I don't want to have an arm cast on for a week, or what is it, I'm sorry, a month after the surgery, right? Is that about it?
It was a while, yeah.
And so your arm's straight in front of you?
Right.
So you can't type on your computer?
I can't type, I can't play the piano, I can't, no.
But I mean, when your arms are in those casts, can you do anything for yourself while you're recovering?
You know, here's where I did, this was my fatal flaw. I did both arms at the same time.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Greatest plan. Didn't think that through all the way.
Oh, that was aggressive at least.
it shaved a couple of months off.
How long did it take for him to finally heal?
You start out in a cast, and then you go to a Bledsoe brace where you can only move, you know, 10 degrees, and okay. 20 degrees, and they, you know, I think you're in a cast for a month.
Yeah.
Then I think they give you 10 degrees back every week.
Wow, every week they give you 10 degrees back?
Right, so you're in it for a while.
So Megan was saying it took overall from start to finish, it was like 2 months about?
Yeah, probably, if she was aggressive with the therapy, about 2 months.
But super worth it?
Yeah, and at this point, like, I had my 10 transfers done 7 years ago.
Right.
At this point, they suggest the bicep, the tricep transfer over the posterior deltoid to tricep.
Why is that?
They have better results with it.
Okay. And for someone, what other things can you do with that? Like, I just keep trying to think of other really great things that you're like, oh man, I can do this again. Awesome. Like, what's one thing that drives me crazy? I can't even think of something. It's people out there don't really realize how frustrating it is when you only can move half the muscles in your arm. It's insanely weird, you know?
And you go from, you know, sitting in your chair and you're fine to laying down. It's like, well, now I'm kind of stuck.
Yeah, it's like I hate it. I hate it so much. I was telling my boyfriend the other day, I wish they could just create, like, just a little robotic legs. They could just, not robotic legs, but just like a suit, like a wetsuit for diving that you can put on your legs and it's full of electrodes and you can just strap it on and you can walk with it. Wouldn't that be great?
It'd be perfect. Why can't we do that?
I know. Why can't they do that? You know, yesterday I had to start some antibiotics, and it was like an instant I felt better, and I was feeling really sick, it's UTI, you know? You know that before antibiotics were invented, like, the life expectancy for someone with a spinal cord injury was 2 years. They figured you'd get some kind of disease, an infection most likely, that would kill you within 2 years, you know?
Oh, I'm sure.
And, because obviously, you can see how you need at least to go on antibiotics at least once a year. I don't know about you, but for me, I do.
Right around once, twice a year, yeah.
I just can't imagine just laying in, you know, and you're not really getting out of your bed back in the 30s. Let's say you broke your neck in World War I, right?
Right.
You know, okay, you first hate life. You think it's hard to live with disability today. Back in the day, no one ever went out in public, really.
No, they didn't. I mean, wheelchairs weren't, you know, unheard of.
No, I we're very lucky, and that's one of the coping methods I try to use, you know, like, at least we have the ADA, at least we have, you know, accessible Vegas, you know?
Right.
You know, and I get frustrated, though. Do you ever get people when they come up to you, and you're out and about just doing your thing, let's say you're in Vegas, gambling, so I'm like, you're doing so good, I'm so, you're just out there doing things.
You get it everywhere.
I am, like, oh geez, I was at Walmart yesterday and this girl getting some chicken thighs, and this lady's like, I was watching you, you're doing such a good job. I was like, oh my god, she's so condescending. And I know she's trying to be nice, so I was not a bitch, but,
right.
You know, I just forget how I look. I guess I always feel so more confident, and then I forget the third person and how I might look to other people, you know?
Apparently you're approachable.
Apparently I'm approachable. Have you ever had anybody, like, just bluntly come up to you and ask you, what happened?
It happens more often than you would think.
Does it happen in other countries more? I feel like in the United States it's not as much, you know?
More here.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind, though. Do you mind telling people?
No, I'm pretty open with everything. Open.
Yeah, I try to be too. I feel like some people are a little bit nosy, like they'll go, oh geez, that's really I'm sorry, you know, and I don't want to make people feel bad for me. That always bugs me, but it is what it is, right?
Right.
So, you know, I think we almost got to cut it here. We're almost out of time, so I feel like we covered a lot of bases here. I always, you know, have ladies on the show, so I'm glad we have you on the program, Brian. You know, first diver guy on the show. I really want to get in the water. I grew up on a lake in the water, and even though I can't feel the water on my body, I think the diving just sounds appealing because you have the suit, so it doesn't really matter anyways, right?
Right. Even with your incident in the water, you're still going to go back in.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have to worry about drowning, right?
Right. You've got all the air you can handle.
All right. Well, I hope you have some fun diving this this winter, and good luck on your house getting finished.
Oh, it'll be great.
You should die. Obviously, you're going to put pictures on Facebook so I can see them, right?
I will. I'll up there for you.
Beautiful. All right, well, have a great weekend, okay?
I will, you too.
Thanks, Brian. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.